This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we got a busy show, man. Five Reasons I Hate You coming up in the next segment. Ted Johnson joining us in an hour to help preview Patriots-Texans. Catch up with our old friend Teddy J. We got an injury report coming up a little later on in this segment. Let's hear from defensive coordinator Matt Burke. He met with the media yesterday. Always enjoy his press conferences. Very first question right out of the chute. What's your scouting report on on Patriots rookie quarterback Drake May?
Big, athletic, moves around pretty good, throws on the move, arm talent. So, again, obviously a lot of unknowns. I'm just trying to sort of triangulate between, what we see, him do well in college tape and what they've done this season so far from, in the structure of their offense and, what sort of the coordinator liked against us last year. So just trying to put it all together and see like what we think. But again, as always, at the end of the day, it's going to be about us executing kind of what we want to execute. So, but you see the talent jumps off tape for sure.
The biggest thing about Drake May is, all right, he's got a propensity to make some risky decisions at times. At least, that's what he did in college. Did in the preseason. I thought in the preseason he had some really nice plays that were the classic. Okay, that looks good by a rookie quarterback in the preseason, but in the regular season that's an interception. Mm-hmm. He got away with it against a fringe player in the second half of a preseason game. That's not going to work in the regular season. So you want to force him into some of those bad decisions. I think when you look at the Texans right now as a defense, where they're doing some really, really good things, the biggest issue is just you got to more consistently stop the run. They come up and they come up with TFLs that stop a drive or what have you, but they're just still letting teams run on them a little too much. But they've been rushing the passer well. They're not racking up sacks to an extreme degree, and Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson are not on pace to be defensive players of the year or anything like that. The thing that I do respect about them and where it's worked is that there's a certain selflessness that you need when you're facing so many athletic quarterbacks week in and week out anymore that you can't go for broke individually trying to get sacks. So if you think about In previous Texans defenses where there were some really good pass rushers, the thing that would always drive me crazy is sometimes you get defensive ends that are constantly running just past the quarterback at the back of the pocket. And they're trying to just really bend the corner and they're going to run as fast as they can, but then they get pushed past the quarterback and it's like there's no pressure at all.
And they're done, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and now you've lost contain on that side. You've got one fat defensive tackle on that entire side of the field.
Yep.
The Texans do a good job of being disciplined in their pass rush. And tell me if this analogy makes sense, Sean. You used to be in sales.
Yeah.
There's some organizations that their whole philosophy, businesses, like real-world businesses, is they are sales-driven. They don't care if their salespeople are D-bags or what. They just want guys that are going to go out and sell.
Yeah.
And it works in that call. You try to use that same culture in another company and it just screws everything up. It screws up the whole culture of everything. I do feel that there's a certain selflessness to Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter right now where they're sacrificing some personal production to be part of a group pass rush that's just going to make quarterbacks uncomfortable, compress pockets, force them to run it to, to their weak hand side, all that stuff, that it doesn't win you sales trips to awards trips to Bermuda.
No.
But it's good for the culture of the organization.
I'm having flashbacks. You saying this stuff. Yeah, because the company, the startup that I was one of the original employees for that I eventually ran sales for the whole company, That's how we attracted sales talent to our company. Is like, we are a sales-driven company. Every person who's not a salesperson in the company is instructed to, when you get called by a salesperson that needs anything, you stop what you're doing and you help that salesperson. To the extent that, I mean, you're using words like, when I was hiring salespeople, I was instructed to find people that think selfishly.
Yeah.
Like, you want to find people. We need salespeople that think selfishly.
Dude, I was like, when I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, I realized I had a really good plan in retirement, and then I realized like 6 months into it, like, I hate this. So I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, and I had a friend who worked for a surgical sales surgical equipment company, very successful. A lot of people out there right now know exactly which company I'm probably talking about, but they are incredibly, incredibly sales driven, and they give everybody a test. So I asked my friend before I take this test, like, should I have any strategy? It's a test that it's like a personality profile.
Sure, yeah.
And he's like, pretend you're the biggest, most selfish a-hole on the planet and the cockiest dude who ever lived, who only cares about taking care of numero uno. And I'm like, I don't know if I can't even fake this. I'm taking the test and I'm like, I can't answer this the way that I think I'm supposed to answer it. Wow. So as soon as I took the test, I'm like, no, this is not for me. So, I know who they're looking for, and this is not me. My friend, by the way, he's that guy. He's their top producer. Yeah. Even by his standards, he was like, no, I had to stretch a little bit and go beyond.
But
that works for that company.
Yes.
But there's a lot of companies that's the exact opposite of the type of the guy they're looking for. So yeah, I think that Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter are in some ways, the personal production is limited by the fact that they are trying to be good team players, and they're trying to have disciplined pass rushes. And, you know, if the quarterback does escape the pocket, be sure that he's escaping it to this side or that side. And it hampers the personal production, yet the sum total of it all is, hey, the Texans are leading the league in pressures by some stat services. Yeah. They're high up there in all the different stat services. Man. It's just not necessarily yielding sacks.
Right. Man, that's where I've got such admiration for Will Anderson. And Danielle Hunter, too. But Danielle Hunter has made his money. You know, this is his second big contract. You know, like, he got paid by the Vikings. He's getting paid by the Texans. You know, Will Anderson is a guy who's in his second year, is as selfless as they come, it would seem. You know, I think he's as selfless as they come, but he's a guy who, like, we saw some of the video last year when he was mic'd up and some of the interviews he did. Like, he wants sacks, man. Like, he wants to get the quarterback on the ground. And that's where I've got real good admiration for a guy who's mature enough to be able to stay disciplined in this type of system, knowing full well that he wants to murder the quarterback, you know?
And part of it is, too, I think, look, he can do more things, too. I don't know if he's limited by his ankle that kept him out during the preseason or not. Some of the elements of being a pass rusher that he wanted to work on in the offseason, it hasn't really showed up in the game. So I'm not saying that there's not upside there with him. It's just that it's not like I'm in a panic about it. I don't need to have two double-digit sack producers to think that it's a good overall pass rush. So they've got to keep, you know, they've got to keep building on it and everything. But so far, the way the defensive line and the defensive backs are kind of tied together and working well as a group, I'm cool with everything with the defense, except for just they're letting up too much chunk yardage in the run game.
Yeah,
it's just versus the really good teams and in the playoffs, they're not going to get away with that. They're going to come up against a roadblock that, okay, you're going against a really good team and they're just continuing to run up and down the field on you. You can't allow that.
Yeah, I don't know if New England's a team that's going to hurt them that way. Now, Kamari Lassiter did not practice again yesterday. It's not looking promising for him. He's got a shoulder injury. It's not looking promising for Sunday. Here is Matt Burke on what if Kamari Lassiter can't go this Sunday.
I'm not sure who's going to be available yet for us, so when we figure out exactly who that is, I think those will, you know, those determinations will be made, and that's like what we do going through the week. Like, again, part of practice, not just obviously prepping for their team, but putting those guys in those spots and putting different people and say, hey, is this sort of set up better than this? And I would say we, you know, I think Coach does as good a job as anybody of just sort of evolving as to the week, like, let's try this out. Man, I don't like that as much. Okay, that looks decent. Let's sort of build on that. Or, hey, this guy's showing up a little bit more. Maybe we can kind of incorporate that element. So I'd say that's probably still ongoing, and we'll have the answer by Sunday. How's that?
Probably. Thanks, Matt. We'll have the answer by Sunday. I think it sucks. How do you like that? Look, of all the weeks to have some depth issues at cornerback, this is probably the week to have them on your schedule, I would say. The one team whose receivers can't seem to get open, that would be the week.
That's where we are, too, with Jalen Petrie, especially, is that, all right, man, he's got some limitations in man coverage. He's not a cornerback. Right. He's a safety who's playing linebacker a lot of the time, and he'll go out and he'll line up in the slot, and sometimes he's in man coverage, and versus good receivers, it doesn't look so hot. Versus mediocre receivers, he does just fine. And that's what they're up against this week. The matchups favor the Texans this week.
Yes, very much so.
The teams with very deep wide receiving cores is where I start to get nervous about the way the Texans defense is constructed and when they do well.
Yeah. Let's get to the offensive side of the ball. Joe Mixon practiced yesterday. He was limited, but he was suited up, doing drills. And he met with the media after practice in the locker room. Now, Mixon has practiced in the last couple of weeks. He practiced the Friday before the Jacksonville game, didn't play, then didn't practice at all leading up to Buffalo. Practice yesterday. We'll see what happens today, but here was Mixon in the locker room afterwards on how did you feel, and are you going to play on Sunday?
I felt good, man. Obviously, been pretty much going back and forth with training staff. Figure out when I'm gonna get back and when I'm gonna start being able to participate in certain things. So it felt good.
It's a step. Do you think it's enough of a step that Sunday you have some optimism, or is it a little soon?
I think we'll probably go through practice tomorrow, see what's going on, and obviously us come up with a decision on whether to go or whether to just wait another week.
All right. To me, the question, Seth, is Joe Mixon 100%? If he's 100%, he should play. If he's ready to go, the ankle's good, then play. If not, I don't think he's playing. And I know the Texans would never say this publicly, and I know you can't look down on any opponent and any given Sunday, blah, 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 blah. I do think when you have honest conversations with yourself about who your opponent is, how important Joe Mixon is, how important the games after the Patriots game are, Packers on the road, Colts at home, Jets on a short week, that you do need to go, okay, can we get by with Cam Akers and Damian Pierce and Dario Gumbawale for another week?
Stephen A. Smith had a clip yesterday or a couple days ago talking about how this is no big deal for Nico Collins to be out, because if Nico's out for 4 weeks and the Texans go 2-2, they're still in a really good position in the standings and everywhere else with Nico Collins coming back. The one issue I have with that is that we don't know that it's only going to be 4 weeks. You know, right. If 4 weeks is the minimum amount of time that he's going to be back. So, yeah, I don't want to be sitting here and acting like, yeah, look at all this. We got found money. We don't have to do a damn thing for the next 4 weeks.
Yeah.
I can't go there. But, yeah, if you're just trying to gauge it, is like, how urgent is it right now? There's some validity to it that this isn't the most urgent week that you got to get Joe Mixon back.
Right.
That if you look at it as objectively as possible, I know Vegas is like, there's a human element to that, but look, the objectively outside the Houston prism, the Texans are a one touchdown favorite in this game without Joe Mixon. With Vegas probably assuming that Joe Mixon's not going to be there and Nico Collins isn't going to be there.
Yep.
But yeah, you should be, if you clean up some of the stuff with the offensive line especially, then yeah, you should be able to handle this team.
Yeah.
It just gets there's a natural fear factor when you start thinking that way.
No, there is. You know,
yeah, like whenever you start thinking that way as a football coach especially, you feel like, I'm a fraud.
Yeah.
Every game matters. Yeah.
It is, and yet, like, not just in football, but in all sports, there's an element of load management now. There's an element of, we know so much medically that it's a form of analytics. It's playing the percentages. You know, how much does holding Joe Mixon out, what percentage does that damage our ability to win? I'm guessing they know that. versus what's the percentage chance he gets hurt again, and now we don't have him for three more weeks after that.
Yeah.
You know? So, but you're right. Like, old school, that's a tough way to go to look at. It's like, oh, you got to take everybody seriously, you know?
But it is also, look, hey, he is what he is now. He's a 28-year-old running back, which is, you're pushing late middle-agedom by NFL running back standards, and you got to take that into account, too. All right, man, maybe we got a guy that's just... maybe physically now. I mean, he hasn't. How many total weeks has he been healthy for the Texans?
One.
The first day of training camp.
Oh God, it's total weeks. Yeah, you're counting like, yeah, that's right, dude. I forgot he missed all of training camp. Yeah, he was gone.
He was healthy the first day of training camp.
First day,
the beginning of it.
He practiced the first 2 days of training camp because I remember camp started on a Thursday. He met with the media on a Friday, and I remember seeing him outside the tent rubbing his quad muscle.
Yeah,
as he was getting ready to do his media, and then he wasn't practicing for literally almost all of the rest of camp, and he wasn't.
Right.
I don't think he was going full bore till the very, very end of camp. You know,
so it's two separate injuries. It's not like the same lingering injury. He's been healthy for a week. Yeah, that's it. And yeah. I mean, who knows when he would have been ready to go in the preseason. They're going to be extra careful with him there.
Yeah.
But, it's something to be aware of. This might be the new reality with Joe Mixon.
Might be. All right, let's do Five Reasons I Hate You, Patriots edition. We'll do it in the next segment. There's way more than five, but we picked five off the top that I think many of you will agree with. Before we get to that, Seth, you've got the Mokarem injury report.
I do.
You do.
Joe Mixon practiced. He was limited, but still, he practiced. Laremy and Damian were both full participants in practice yesterday. Kenyon Green and Titus Howard were both limited. Robert Woods out again, as was Lassiter. Dez King is still on the practice squad. Patriots' most notable ones was Ramondre Stevenson was out both Wednesday and Thursday, and that is your injury report brought to you by Mokarem Injury Lawyers.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Ted Johnson joins us top of the hour. We'll get a preview of the Patriots game this Sunday against the Texans from a hardcore New England point of view. Ted Johnson, of course, our former colleague here at Sports Radio 610, won three rings with the Patriots, does morning radio up in Boston. It'd be good to catch up with him. 9 a.m., we will do that, top of the hour. All right, let's do this, though. Let's preview the Patriots game through a prism of hate. Five reasons I hate you. Some teams are harder to come up with reasons than others. The Patriots are not one of those teams. Patriots, five reasons, rolled right off the tongue, I would say.
You didn't have to consult your notes or anything. Huh?
Nothing.
You didn't have to use AI for this?
I did not. Nope. Just the old brain. So let's start with, we'll count them down. Number five, Texan fans will feel this one acutely. The New England Patriots were the breeding ground for what became the Mad King, Jack Easterby.
I'm a people person.
Yeah. He was such a people person in New England that he was able to people person his way into getting an executive job with the Texans and then people person his way into plowing through the entire organization just willy-nilly.
In a weird way, Jack Easterby is somebody to be both reviled and yet also maybe looked at as, hey, what could I take from his little tool book to get a job that I'm vastly unqualified to have? And I think the biggest lesson is, hey, attach yourself to a very, very a top-notch, first-rate organization. And be sure you claim credit for a lot of the stuff that was actually already happening when you got there.
Which
is what he did. He loved to talk about all the different ways that basically he turned the Patriots into a championship caliber organization after they had already won three Super Bowls.
Right.
How did he get that job? Well, he was in an organization where one of the defensive linemen shot and killed his girlfriend and himself.
Right.
He couldn't prevent it because he was such a nice guy after all had happened that the Patriots decided, oh, yeah, that's what we need.
Yep.
We need to bring him in here.
Yep. So I will say this, as long as we were talking about salespeople in the previous segment, he would have been a good salesperson. He can sell. He sold himself into getting the job that he ended up getting, you know?
Yeah. And speaking a lot of make it sound like you're get a gunny sack full of motivational slogans and pseudo philosophies and everything, and you can snow a bunch of people into thinking you're saying deep things.
Yep, absolutely. So number five, we have the Patriots to blame for Jack Easterby. Number four, Patriot fans act like they actually, maybe more so than any other fan base, they act like they actually got rings along with the players and the coaches in those Super Bowls.
They they had an air of, we understand football,
right,
and you don't.
Right.
I would extend that to the Patriots media members as well.
Agreed.
People that covered the Patriots felt like they just understood football differently and on a higher level than anybody else because they got to watch this magnificence week in and week out.
Yeah.
So they really understand what it takes.
Yeah, and I can't play specific examples of it. I'll just say you know it when you hear it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
This would be my request to those fans and media members is that as you embark on this era of Patriots football, which is going to be likely horrible for the next several years, not every team can turn it around as fast as the Houston Texans did. You're likely going to be bad for the next several years. There's a good chance Drake May's not the guy. Not that's no direct disrespect to him. That's just the odds of quarterbacks. Most of them are not the guy. This would be my request, is that when we get into year 5, year 7, year 10 of your team being terrible, is that you be equally know-it-all about rooting for a crappy team. You know?
Right, like exactly.
Hey, look, I've watched crappy football for the last 10 years, so I know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Get on our level. We've got an actual broad, full education on all this stuff.
Yep. So that's number four. Five Reasons I Hate You. Number five was Jack Easterby. Number four, Patriot fans thinking they know everything about football. Number three, I noticed this yesterday when I went to their website. One of Bill Belichick's gravy training kids is still on the staff there. It's not the mullet kid. It's not Steve. I think that Steve is his name.
Mm-hmm.
It's Brian Belichick, their safeties coach, who looks exactly like a young Bill Belichick. It's incredible. And the thing is, he's probably like 29 years old. He graduated from college in 2016. So he's probably like 29 or 30 years old. He looks like he's 43. He's got a gigantic forehead. He went to Suffield Academy. So he is a... I grew up like 5 minutes away from Suffield Academy.
Yeah.
It's a boarding school in Connecticut.
Little snooty rich kid bastard school.
Yes,
is that what it is?
Yes. They're not the hard scrabble Connecticut kid like I am that went to public schools. I was a public school kid. They went to Suffield Academy.
You used to have to get in a knife fight just to make it to your locker.
There
basically was
one time a kid hit me with his tennis racket and it hurt really bad. So anyways,
it's carbon fiber.
Exciting. Kid hit me with a 3-wood. So the Belichick gravy train, even though he's not in the building anymore, rolls on. Brian Belichick, safeties coach, gravy train.
I don't know a damn thing about Brian Belichick, but I hate him.
Yes.
That's why I hate him. This is who he is in my mind. Little snooty rich kid, but wants to have the tough guy mentality, even though he's never known a moment of hardship in his life other than daddy not giving him enough hugs and kisses as he grew up. And that now he lords over his, don't you know I'm a Belichick, over everybody else.
Suffield.
I don't care if he's I don't care if that's what he's like or not. That's what he is to me.
Suffield Academy.
And the Rivers School. That was the other place he went. He went to the Rivers School and Suffield Academy.
Suffield Academy. Went to college at Trinity College. Not the one in San Antonio. The one in Hartford, Connecticut. That's a small liberal arts school. Played lacrosse there. And then daddy handed him a job as a safeties coach with the New England Patriots. Does it get any
Wax
more hateable?
Bro Nepo baby.
Yeah. Does it get any more hateable than that? All right, let's go. That's number three. Number two. As an organization, the Patriots are the sole reason that we're going to have to endure a world in which Eli Manning will be a Hall of Fame quarterback. They are the only reason that Eli Manning is going to go into the Hall of Fame. And I can't believe I'm conceding this now. He will go into the Hall of Fame at some point. God, if he goes in first ballot, then everybody should turn in their their card. McClain and everybody, if he goes in first ballot, we need 50 new people choosing the Hall of Fame. I can deal with eventually. I can't deal with first ballot. But he's only going in, Seth, because the Patriots choked in two Super Bowls against this guy.
Yeah, yeah. You've personally elevated Eli Manning into a status. Yeah. Because you couldn't cover for an eighth of a second longer.
Yes.
On two specific plays.
Oh, my God. Oh, so that's reason number two. Reason number one is really a cornucopia of reasons. Both on the field and off the field, this is a nefarious organization that gets involved in all types of off the field and on the field crime. Mm-hmm. To the point where you could just spin a wheel. Ben, spin the wheel. Let's just spin the wheel and just it'll land on any crime that's on this wheel. Bing! Aaron Hernandez. He was a New England Patriot. Have you been watching any of the Hernandez FX series at all?
I've just been watching the really bad clips on X. Yeah, as people bring... it looks like a horrible, horrible
it's
series.
It's delightfully terrible.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
It's bad enough that you can't figure out whether it's intentionally as bad as it is or if it's just that bad.
Yeah.
I guess you just stop. The clips I've seen, the acting is horrible. Every single actor just looks like they're doing a bad impression of the guy that they're trying to portray.
Yeah.
I think I will sit down and watch the whole thing or just to laugh at just how bad it is.
It's really bad. And some of the actors they have playing. The guy they had playing Urban Meyer, pretty good. The guy they had playing Belichick, I haven't seen the Belichick episode yet. I've only seen the clips that you've seen.
Yeah.
He looks a lot like Belichick, and the overacting is amazing. Like, it is way overacting. But you could keep... Hey, Ben, spin that wheel one more time. There's... You got Aaron Hernandez. You got Robert Kraft, Happy Endings, down in Florida.
Oh, yeah, Bob Kraft, the owner, who's still there. Who's just he's an old creep who tries to dress... he tries to dress young. He tries to appeal to the younger folks. I mean, he knocked up his girlfriend, and he's got her, well, allegedly, and he's got her set up and everything. He took care of her there. But, yeah, he's a creepy old man.
Yeah.
Bob Kraft is probably the creepiest of all the creepy old men that some of the owners in the NFL. I would take Bob Kraft himself, who skates by and doesn't get the scrutiny from the league office because obviously we know whose palms are greased.
He's going to go into the Hall of Fame here at some point. It's ridiculous.
It's a creepy old man.
Yep.
Just a creepy, creepy old man. The guy that is playing Belichick in that Aaron Hernandez series, people have compared him to Vincent D'Onofrio in Men in Black. Okay. He's the one that plays the alien.
Yeah.
He's got a disheveled, kind of creepy and weird looking. That's what. So now, whenever I see Bill Belichick, I imagine him as that alien and that Vincent D'Onofrio character in Men in Black. And it makes it everything. All the really, really smart things Belichick's saying in the media these days, it's hard. It's hard for me to see through the Vincent D'Onofrio filter.
I can see that. I'm trying. They have a scene in the war room. It goes down like when Hernandez got picked, like the kind of the talking it into existence that Belichick was doing while they were on the clock. And it was really interesting. And I was looking around the room, I'm going, okay, who's playing Casario here? Like, which guy is Casario? And I couldn't pick out a distinct Casario character in there. Man, I got to go check IMDb because maybe they list someone who actually is playing Nick Casario. I mean, they've clearly got a guy playing Gronk because he has lines. Belichick, Brady, Tebow. Urban Meyer is pretty good in this thing.
I don't think that at any point in any of these meetings, if they had them, as they were creating this series, I don't think they were like, well, let's see, we can't include everybody in the organization, but we got to figure out a way to get Casario into this because that's who the people want to see. I don't think they're operating at that.
Don't think they are either. Unfortunately, I think you're right. Apparently the guy who plays Gronk, you've seen the Gronk clips of that guy.
Yeah.
The guy, I mean, just way over the top Gronk. Kay Adams had Gronk on her podcast yesterday, and they played the clips from the Hernandez FX series with Gronk. And apparently the guy playing Gronk is a really good friend of Gronk.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So him being so over the top is almost like a rib on Gronk. You know what I mean? Like, he's he played it to the hilt, like, in some ways, just to make fun of his buddy, you know?
With Gronk's full endorsement.
Of course, yeah. No, Gronk was laughing. Gronk didn't give a crap. Gronk was laughing about it.
The biggest issue I usually have with football movies or shows or anything, it's in, like, the actual physiques and athleticism of the actors themselves. Like, you would think in this day of... like all the special effects and the way they can digitalize things, that they'd figure out a way to do it better, but they just look so slow and unathletic and sloppy that it's hard to move past it. I have a hard time suspending disbelief.
The guy they have playing Aaron Hernandez in this is very muscle bound. Like, he's very built. Yeah.
But when he runs
like someone who's never run before. Like, it's
right. And it's hard to move past that.
It's so funny. I watch an episode of it, Seth, and just let me know what you think and see if you stick with it. But it's not too bad. All right, top of the hour, we'll talk to Ted Johnson, our good friend, about the Patriots and the Texans coming up on Sunday. What's that?
Just reminded me about Bob Kraft. I still like the dude let Putin Debo him out of his Super Bowl ring.
Yeah.
And then admitted it. Like, he basically showed weakness in the moment and then also admitted weakness to the rest of the country and the former Soviet Union itself, who's trying to rapidly reassemble themselves. You can't show that kind of weakness, Bob.
No, you're right. We could have done a whole Bob Kraft reason on this thing. Point being, it's Five Reasons I Hate You, and Seth and I are already on, like, number 11 right now.
Yeah.
So let's kill these guys on Sunday, all right, Texans? Nathaniel Hackett demoted. We've got the interim head coach of the Jets making that announcement. Anonymous executives on the firing of Robert Saleh. Execanon is in the building. We've got that for you. Ted Johnson, top of the hour. That's all coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
So Nathaniel Hackett demoted in New York. This was Jeff Ulrich yesterday. He's the new interim head coach for the New York Jets. He's the defensive coordinator as well. And reportedly, Robert Saleh, before he was fired by the Jets, had made the decision to take play calling away from Aaron Rodgers' buddy, Nathaniel Hackett, who's the offensive coordinator, and give those duties to Todd Downing, who's the passing game coordinator. Saleh gets fired. Ulrich is going to stand by that decision, though. He demoted Nathaniel Hackett yesterday. Here was the announcement.
Regarding the staff, after a lot of time to think about it, and did not make this decision easily by any means, I'm going to make Todd Downing the play caller for the New York Jets going forward. And this is more a byproduct of a different take on things. I'm not saying it's a better or worse take on things by any means, but just a different take on things, a fresh approach. So ultimately, Todd will have the full say on the game plan and ultimately the plays that are called within the game.
So Ulrich is already trying not to piss everybody off. He's just, hey, man, it's not good. It's not bad. It's just different. It's just new.
Yeah. Everything's different, new. Shake it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to make a change for change sake. Not that Nathaniel Hackett is hopelessly lost and never was a good offensive coordinator to begin with or anything.
No.
Yeah. It's just sometimes we just got to just shake it up a little bit.
Yeah. Variety's the spice of life, baby.
This is where the speculation about how much Aaron Rodgers had to do with or did not have to do with the firing of Robert Saleh. Frankly, now it just gets into wanton speculation, which I will now partake of. This is what I wonder. If this move was done on behalf, if the firing of Robert Saleh was done on behalf of Aaron Rodgers, but without Aaron Rodgers actually saying, hey, this is what I want.
Sanctioning the hit, yeah.
But then does it become, let's say that the owner, acting on his own, thought like, oh, now you're gonna demote Nathaniel Hackett. Like, no, this is the last straw. We need to keep Aaron Rodgers happy. But now, because the crosshairs get turned directly onto Aaron Rodgers, and everybody assumes that Aaron Rodgers was behind it, do they now have to say, well, we don't want Aaron Rodgers to have that extra pressure, so we'll go ahead and we'll keep Nathaniel Hackett demoted,
yeah,
so that we're not bringing even more pressure onto Aaron Rodgers.
Well, if they're trying to take smoke away from Aaron Rodgers, they had no choice but to stand by what Saleh wanted to do.
Right.
They had no
right.
choice. Yeah. And honestly, like, based on performance, they almost have no choice. Nathaniel Hackett is a boob. He's not a good coach. He's not a good play caller. Like, you look at, and this isn't just a recency thing with the Jets. Like, he got fired after less than a season with the Broncos. He was calling plays there. He was the play caller in Jacksonville for a year, and he didn't make it through a full year with that responsibility. He got play calling in Jacksonville ripped away from him during the season as well. Other than him being a second-generation coach, his dad was Paul Hackett, who used to be the coach at USC and other places.
Grandfather was Buddy Hackett.
I don't. Now, that actually would stand to reason a little bit more. there's no good reason this guy should be anywhere near a headset calling
plays. The whole thing is, and again, just reading the writing on the wall, it seems that twice he's gotten jobs basically as an enticement to Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
That he gets this job in Denver as Denver's trying to make a play for Aaron Rodgers. So they make Nathaniel Hackett the head coach. Then the Jets, in trying to get Aaron Rodgers, just go ahead and hire Nathaniel Hackett as their offensive coordinator. And without none of it really making sense for any other reason.
Yeah.
There's no reason that he should have gotten that head coaching job in Denver, except that he might be an enticement to Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, totally. Someone needs to ask Aaron Rodgers. It should be McAfee. He's got him on for an hour every week. Why do you think Nathaniel Hackett is a good coach? Like, what is it about Nathaniel Hackett that attracts you to him, you know, coaching-wise so much?
I've seen him ask that question before, yeah. And if I could paraphrase from my unreliable memory,
mm-hmm.
The answer was something along the lines of, he's a swell fella.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, he's a swell fella.
Right. I'm a swell fella. You don't want me calling your plays for you.
Yeah.
I think I am. I don't know. Maybe I'm not that swell. So Execanon is weighing in on this, Seth. 10 anonymous executives and coaches weighing in on the firing of Robert Saleh. Hard to get 10 executives and coaches to agree on anything, but unanimously they all agreed, what the hell are the Jets doing firing him after 5 weeks? There's not a single one that thought Robert Saleh deserved to be fired at this point in this season. Now, if you look at his overall record, if you go 20-36, then you're out on the plank at that point. Like, if you go 20-36, if it's your fault, if it's not your fault, whatever, but you're in your fourth year and you're 20-36 as a coach, then anything can happen. We concede that. But the fact of the matter is, this team was put together to be built around Aaron Rodgers, and the guys had 5 games plus 4 snaps with Aaron Rodgers as the head coach. So I think that was the kind of prevailing thing was, hey, he didn't even really get a chance to coach Aaron Rodgers. Hey, you win on Monday against the Bills, and now the team's in first place. Why shouldn't Robert Saleh get a crack? Why is Jeff Ulrich getting a crack at putting the team in first? Not Robert Saleh, who's had to endure all this craziness over the last year and a half. So they all agree too soon to fire Robert Saleh. They all agree on that.
Yeah. So now we see, what are you hoping for with it? Yeah, I hope they're a dumpster fire because the Texans play them.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah, hopefully this turns into just even way worse than it was before.
Amen.
Which wasn't actually all that bad, other than that Aaron Rodgers doesn't look salvageable at this point.
Again, if they make the field goal against Denver, I think Robert Saleh is still employed. I think the difference between him being employed and unemployed right now is the difference between being 3-2 and 2-3.
Nate Tice did a really good breakdown of C.J. Stroud, showed some of the good plays that C.J.'s had, even as the offense hasn't been performing well as a whole. Like, basically, just to show some of the higher-level stuff that C.J. is doing. Some of it was some of the decisions and plays that he made in the Vikings game versus the way that Aaron Rodgers responded and reacted to the way the Vikings were playing defense.
Not well.
And that Rodgers looked very much like a guy that blew off off-season activities to go on his vacation in Egypt.
Yep.
Like, this, all of the hunger and drive and everything that allowed Tom Brady to do what he did in his 40s, We know Aaron Rodgers doesn't have that same driver commitment.
Nope.
You know, and now especially coming off of an Achilles tendon, I don't know if there's anybody that can salvage the situation, which is that Aaron Rodgers is probably just done. That's it for him.
Yep.
He's most likely scenario, if I had to gamble my 401k on it right now,
washed.
It's that Aaron Rodgers is done.
Yep. We were talking about Belichick in the previous segment. I have another clip. Again, this is probably a petty thing as much as anything, but I know you'll get a kick out of this. Belichick, I don't know if he was on. I don't think it was inside the NFL. Does Mike Lombardi do a podcast? Does Belichick do stuff with Lombardi now? Because he was
Lombardi
in this
does.
Video.
Yeah, he does. Lombardi does something with Belichick, and he is also on the McAfee Show weekly.
Okay, so this was whatever it is, whatever project it is, Belichick works on with Lombardi podcast or whatever. This is on video. Popped up. They were talking about Davante Adams and trading Davante Adams, and Belichick was talking about what teams should and shouldn't give up. What's too much for Davante Adams?
Davante Adams wants to get traded. That's going to be a big story. And I have a feeling that, you know, as we tape this, by the end of this week, he probably will get traded.
Not for a second-round pick, which supposedly is what they're asking for.
That's ridiculous.
I don't see how anybody's going to give up a second-round pick for him. You'd have to feel like this guy is going to, Adams is going to take us to the promised land, and he's going to get us over the hump this year because he's also got a big salary.
You gave up a second-round pick in 2019 for Mohamed Sanu. What the hell are you talking about?
Mohamed Sanu.
You're going to tell me
the salary was the only thing that's
right.
The difference between Davante Adams and Mohamed Sanu. Mohamed Sanu was out of football within a calendar year. Yeah, you gave up a second round pick for Mohamed Sanu.
Who would do that? Who would do such a thing?
I'm not interested in this history. You know, don't start revising history and acting like Belichick never made any questionable personnel decisions or draft picks. Come on. No way in hell you'd give up a second-round pick for Davante Adams.
Belichick's saying that himself. Like, you wouldn't give up a second-round pick. You, I'm looking at the camera. You, Bill, gave up a second-round pick for Mohamed Sanu. Oh, my
now
God.
Now I'm angry at that documentary, though, too, for that Aaron
Hernandez
docudrama. Because there's a scene, one of the scenes I saw was when they were discussing whether or not they should draft Aaron Hernandez, and one of the scouts during the draft that year, and one of the scouts says, "We already drafted Gronkowski. You know, we already had a tight end." And then Belichick sits back and says, "Nah, two tight ends, put a fullback on the strong side. Nobody's ever seen that before." I'm like, "What? What are you talking about? Like, nobody. Nobody's ever put two tight ends and a fullback on the field. What the hell are you talking about, script writers?
Do you think script writer? Okay, script writer.
Right? Yeah. No, that's not what Belichick said.
Okay,
no.
Yeah.
In the long history of football, nobody's ever thought about putting two tight ends and a fullback together.
You knew exactly what I was asking.
Let's see what the league has. Let's see how they respond to that.
All right. Heading into the 9 o'clock hour, Ted Johnson, our former colleague, our good friend. He won three Super Bowl rings in New England. He covers the Patriots up in Boston. He's on the radio up there. He's getting off the radio right now, in fact, and he's going to jump on the phone with us. We talk to our friend Ted Johnson coming up next.